From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
El Cerrito.
Union Square.
San Francisco.
South of Market.
From Albany.
Hayes Valley.
Rock Ridge in Oakland.
I'm from the Civic Center. I live across the street.
Coming up, we'll hear the stories of two Middle Eastern refugees who recently moved to the Bay Area and learned they suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder.
Sometimes I feel like everything's like for me after Iraq is different, even like the roads, the air, the dust. I know back home, the dust of back home. I know the air of back home.
We'll also find out why it can be so hard for refugees to seek help.
I wanted to start to tell her my case, and I couldn't. All that time I was crying, I couldn't finish a sentence.
We're looking at refugee mental health on today's special edition of Cross Currents. Stay with us. Over the past decade, California has taken in more Middle Eastern refugees than any other state in the country. Here in the Bay Area, San Jose is a resettlement hub. More than 1,300 Middle Eastern refugees have moved there since 2006. About a third are from Iraq. And most have experienced violence related to the war.
What happened will like remain like a scars inside yourself, especially like we saw a lot of stuff not normal, like dead people in the street, people killed in front of your eye. I don't believe like I'm going to forget them.
That's an Iraqi refugee we're calling Jasmine, who asked that we change her name for this story. After 2 years in the U.S., she's been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, and she's receiving therapy for it. But Jasmine says Iraqi culture often considers mental health problems shameful, and she's concerned about embarrassing her family. As Shuka Kalantari reports, it's an issue many refugees deal with.
And this is Iraqi song. We got all people in the party to dance with us. And as you see, it's ring with many nationalities.
24-year-old Jasmine is sitting in a San Jose community center, watching a video on her laptop of a room full of people dancing. She's an engineering student, and that night she had introduced her college classmates to a traditional Iraqi dance called chobi.
It was like ethnic night on campus, so we got our foods. We got baklava, kunafa, Arabic coffee, and Iraqi tea with cardamom.
Jasmine misses her home. She misses her culture. But as a refugee displaced by war, she can't go back. She says she's enjoying the safety she and her family have found in their new home in California. But finding happiness has proven to be more difficult.
You left your home. You left the place that you belong to. You left your people who love there. Even like, sometimes I feel like everything's like for me after Iraq is different. Even like the roads, the air, the dust. I know back home, the dust of back home. I know the air of back home.
Before she fled Iraq, Jasmine was studying computer sciences at Baghdad University. She left after insurgents killed her father.
He was walking with a couple of his friends. There's a car stopped. There's three armed people inside it. He called my father's name and he gave him 7 shots, 4 in his chest and 3 in his head.
Soon after her father's death, some classmates warned her that strange men were looking for her. Frightened of being kidnapped and held for ransom, she fled and never returned to the campus.
Because at that time when my father killed my other friends, her father got kidnapped and they didn't receive body. They don't have right now any kind of knowledge if he's alive or dead or what. So I can't say I'm unique. I'm something common in Iraq, unfortunately.
Within 4 months of her father's murder, Jasmine's family escaped to Syria. 2 years later, they were granted asylum and moved to San Jose. She says her family was in survival mode in Iraq and experienced a delayed reaction to the stress of war.
After a while, you notice, your huge loss, the country and the house and the father, and make me notice that I have, grave issue because when my father got killed, I couldn't say goodbye to him.
Once she landed in America, depression hit Jasmine hard.
It was my dream to be teacher in Baghdad University. Right now, I believe it's so far. I can't, reach to be teacher in Baghdad University. You start being, so far from your, dreams back home. Right now, I feel like I'm not like only starting from zero, before zero, because people, they don't trust like my education.
Jasmine's social worker recommended she see a therapist and referred her to the Center for Survivors of Torture. Dr. James Livingston is a psychologist at the center. He says just the experience of having to flee your home country is usually enough to cause post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD.
The re-experiencing symptoms are very painful and disruptive because they're typically accompanied by the kinds of feelings that were experienced in the original situation. And so terror, horror, all sorts of very painful emotions.
Jasmine remembers one of those flashbacks. She was at a women's studies class at her college in San Jose. They were watching a documentary about a war in Chile. After the film, the teacher asked students to try and imagine how their lives would be if they lived in war.
So she tried like to make the student like feel the feelings of these people. So she started like direct her hand for the last student in the class. You imagine that you lost your husband. And she came to me. You imagine that they tried to kidnap you.
Jasmine didn't have to imagine.
I feel like I'm out of air. I left the class and I remained outside like for over like 20 hours, just like crying in a wail.
For the next 2 days, her mind was flooded with bad memories. She says even seemingly unrelated things would trigger her symptoms.
Sometimes like part of songs make me like really like sad and depression. Sometimes like if something happened with me, I feel like I'm out of the world for a couple of days.
Jasmine says she also has an extra burden of constantly worrying about her friends and family back in Baghdad.
I feel like kind of like guilty. I'm sitting here, I'm like normal day, and there's people here like still suffering back home and facing like the same problems that I faced.
Dr. Livingston, the therapist at Center for Survivors of Torture, says this burden has real effects. It can be hard for people with PTSD to focus their attention long enough to be able to do new things or move forward with their lives.
We get people who were professionals in their home countries who are very intelligent and very educated and find themselves unable to learn because they're traumatized.
Jasmine says she can't forget her past, but she is learning how to deal with it.
Especially like when I'm overthinking, I go to crochet. So the stitch that took for me like normal times, like 10 minutes, when I'm like in a certain situation, wow, in 2 minutes I did this.
Still, she knows that the healing process will be slow. Reporter Shuka Kalantari has been looking at how Middle Eastern refugees in the U.S. deal with the psychological scars of war. You can let us know what you think about this report by calling 415-264-7106. Just leave us a message at 415-264-7106. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. We just heard from a woman we're calling Jasmine. She's an Iraqi refugee in San Jose who's struggling with PTSD and depression. Many Middle Eastern refugees are Iraqis who, like Jasmine, have fled war-related violence. But in the past decade, the largest number of refugees in California have actually come from Iran. More than 15,000 Iranians have moved to the Golden State since 2006. Though their country isn't currently at war, many Iranians suffer religious and political persecution. And they face many of the same social and cultural taboos about seeking mental health care as Iraqi refugees. In this next segment, reporter Shuka Kalantari tells us how one woman has overcome those barriers and how others might do the same. Azini Zadifar is a 45-year-old Iranian refugee living alone in a small studio apartment in San Jose. Izadifar has shoulder-length black hair with a few gray streaks that she keeps tied in a bun. When she opens the door, she's smiling.
Hello. Salam, hi, how are you?
Izadifar came to the U.S. in 2009 seeking asylum. She says that's the first time she ever saw a psychologist, though there were signs she might have needed to earlier.
When I was in Iran, and even up to probably a year ago, at a certain time during the night, I would wake up. You know, I would wake up shouting, like having nightmares. I always had this problem.
Izadifar spent the ages of 16 to 19 in Iran's infamous Evin prison. She knew she carried the memories of that time with her, but it wasn't until she came to the U.S. that she realized she had been living with PTSD for nearly three decades.
It had become so normal for me that I couldn't even understand that there was a problem there. I had a sleep disorder, you know, and it could be related to the trauma I had in prison. Then I realized, okay, that's a sign of PTSD.
Izadifar wouldn't have always used the term PTSD. It's not as common in Iranian culture. Dr. Lauren Crane is a psychologist working with refugees. He says refugees like Izadifar often don't seek therapy because of deep cultural taboos.
In most other countries, people associate psychologists and psychiatrists with really severe mental illness.
Crane says some cultures don't see conditions like depression as a chronic disease. It's more like a temporary problem.
And for problems in living, they might go to a respected family member. They might go to, in some cases, an imam or religious leader. In other cases, they might go to a medical doctor.
It's hard for many to accept the idea that mental health problems may require specialized treatment. Refugee Azini Zadifar says many who do get therapy often keep it a secret from their community.
We are not very much open-minded when it comes to mental health issues. But there's a tendency in our culture to underestimate that and say, okay, that was past. Now we are in a free society. We have to live our lives. We have to get a job and buy a car and just be normal.
It's taken a long time to realize, but her past experiences remain very much in the present. She was a young teenager after the Iranian Revolution of 1979. Like many of her peers, she participated in secret meetings and demonstrations against the country's new Islamic government. But before long, she was arrested. She still remembers her first few weeks in the prison while she waited to be interrogated.
I was sitting there behind that door and waiting for my turn, and just hearing people screaming, shouting, crying, begging not to be tortured and stuff like that.
Izadifar was eventually placed in a small cell, along with dozens of other female prisoners. She says sometimes the room was so crowded they would have to take turns sleeping at night because there wasn't enough space for all of them to lie down at the same time.
I witnessed at least seven of my cellmates completely go crazy, losing their minds.
She says even though she never had a moment alone, prison life kept her completely isolated. She says the more people knew about each other, the more likely they'd be tortured for that information. She still remembers one time when someone did speak.
It was a rainy day, and another stalemate of mine, she was 17. I was almost the same age. It was just us walking, and we were all wet. And I don't know why, she started telling me her whole life story, how she was brought up, how many sisters and brothers she had, how she was involved in this political group. And then our time was up and we had to come back. And so we came back to the room and they called her and they took her and they executed her. So the next morning, I woke up with gunshots, hearing these voices. And I clearly remember that I opened my eyes. I told myself, no, she's not executed. She's living somewhere. It's not happening. And I just go back to sleep.
After that day, Izadifar stopped talking to her cellmates. She was released 2 years later and more or less went on with her life. She married and moved to Austria, where she began working on Iranian human rights campaigns for Amnesty International. But when her marriage ended, she realized she couldn't survive alone in Austria, and she couldn't go back to Iran. She decided to seek asylum in California. It wasn't an easy decision.
Although I didn't have any other choices, but, you know, if you get asylum, you cannot go back to your own country. You cannot see your family. You cannot see your friends. It's not an easy decision.
As part of the refugee process, once she arrived in the U.S., Izadifar had to visit an immigration lawyer and prove why she couldn't return to Iran. But every time she tried to talk to her lawyer about her time in prison, she would start crying.
I wanted to start to tell her my case, and I couldn't. I had an appointment for 30 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and all that time I was crying. I couldn't finish a sentence. And she said, you know, you have to go for therapy. This is urgent for you. This is what you need.
On the advice of her lawyer, Izadifar began to get counseling at the Center for Survivors of Torture in San Jose, also known as CST. Izadifar says she sees many of her same symptoms in other Iranian refugees.
I can clearly see that how the traumas that these refugees, these asylees have gone through is still affecting them.
Not everyone in Izadifar's position seeks therapy. Dr. Lauren Crane says many people fear being judged
as having something wrong with them, even though I think all members of their community would be sympathetic because they're struggling with the same issues and having many of the same symptoms.
Crane has been working with refugees for over two decades. He started out taking a traditional Western approach to treating them.
What are you here for? What are your presenting symptoms? When did these symptoms start? Have you had prior psychiatric history?
But he said he quickly realized that this wouldn't work. So instead, he frames the questions to focus on quality of life issues, like how they're doing finding housing or work.
In the course of our conversations, naturally, they will tell me about the difficulties that they're having, which are often related to their symptoms of depression and PTSD. But I'm not framing it as a psychological evaluation. So they're much more willing to talk with me about what their experience is here.
Another big barrier to mental health care is access. Refugees with minors in their families get 5 years of free services, including health care. But refugees without kids only qualify for 8 months of services. So, in less than a year, they need to find a job, a home, and learn English, all while possibly dealing with the symptoms of PTSD.
Practical and psychological support is often works best. When working with the refugee population.
Sally Sherrick is a therapist at CST. She says only after addressing their basic needs can refugees even begin to think about mental health. But it's not always easy to get them into the office. So sometimes, Sherrick goes to them. Inside a small waiting room at the Lenzen Health Clinic, a handful of refugees are waiting to see a therapist. Sherrick and others provide free sessions here.
So this is where patients come after they've met with the medical doctors and had a physical exam.
Down the hall from the waiting room, Sherrick is standing in a small exam room sparsely decorated with a world map.
They're familiar with this setting, which is what makes it a lot easier for them to meet with a therapist here. It breaks down a lot of the stigma and obstacles and barriers.
Sharik says she spends a long time gaining the trust of her refugee clients.
Building rapport is kind of like the first step towards engaging them in any conversations about mental health.
CST uses other unique methods to reach out to Middle Eastern refugees, like hosting potlucks and educational seminars. To make that approach work, they rely on refugees like Azini Zadifar. She's now doing outreach to other Iranian refugees in the San Jose area. She goes to cultural events and hands out Farsi language pamphlets about the free therapy at CST. She also hosts events on nutrition in the U.S., education, and other topics of practical value. Izadifar says reaching out to other refugees helps her deal with her own past trauma.
The wound will always be there, but there's a difference between a wound that is not healed, that has not been exposed to the sun, to a wound that is been healed and now you see a scar, you know? It's different. The wound will be there, but you're not as sensitive and it's not as painful.
She's also using writing as an outlet. Right now, she's working on her memoir. She says those stories aren't hard to remember.
A part of, especially people who have been in prison, a part of us is still in the prison. Even if you are living in a beautiful land like California, a big part of your being can still be in that prison.
After being released from Iran's prison, it took Izadifar almost 30 years to make it to California. But in some ways, she's only now leaving. For Cross Currents, I'm Shuka Kalantari.
That story was produced with support from the New America Media Health Fellowship Program. You can hear all of our reporting on post-traumatic stress disorder and the long-term effects of war at our website. It's kalw.org. That's also where you can subscribe to our podcast. The Cross Currents team includes Hana Baba, Jen Chien, Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Julia Lundberg, Casey Miner, Erica Mu, Rena Palta, Brian Pelletier, Stephen Short, Nina Morente, Judy Silber, and Chris Hoff. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Cross Currents theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And thanks to you. We are listener-supported radio. And we'll leave you with another edition of my mixtape, where people share songs that mean something special to them. Take it away.
Hi, my name is Erica Fox. I live in the Mission District here in San Francisco. My song is Cupid by Sam Cooke.
Cupid, draw back your bow and let your arrow go. Straight to my lover's heart for me, for me.
I like it, or it's important to me because my dad used to take me to this burger joint in Portland every Sunday after I played soccer. And they had a jukebox that had not been updated since, there wasn't even Simon and Garfunkel on this jukebox. It was a little bit old. But they had Cupid, and for some reason I really loved it. And he'd let me play one song every Sunday, so I'd always play that one.
Girl who doesn't know I exist, and this you can fix. So, Cupid, draw back your bow, and let your arrow go straight to my lover's heart. For me, nobody but me. Cupid, please hear my cry and let.
Tune into Cross Currents weekdays at 5. We've got action.
He's hoisted up by his ankles and hung upside down from the building.
Suspense.
I don't know if you heard that, but we actually just heard a smoke detector battery beep.
Romance.
Jerry, who I've been hanging out with, is my lover.
And style.
The key to his outfit is a pair of homemade AstroTurf armbands.
Kind of like so. That's my trademark, is the AstroTurf.
Not enough? We've also got penguins. Politicians.
Don't be economic, girly man.
Medical mysteries.
You would give me a pat on my belly?
Yeah, you know, protect those ovaries.
And of course, music.
Music?
Music.
Music.
Where's the music?
All that in one show. It's Cross Currents, weekdays at 5 on KALW.